Good to be with you today. Good to have those of you that are visiting. We're glad that you're here. And appreciate Rex speaking last week while I was out of town. I was out of town for a work commitment, and turned out to be good training for me, even though I was the trainer on site at a FedEx printing facility. But I was required to wear a mask from 7 o'clock in the morning till 7 o'clock in the evening, you know, training two different shifts of people 5 days in a row. So that was not the most comfortable thing in the world for me, and I relished the bathroom breaks very much, so I could go in there, I can take this off. But so I'm in good practice now for what we have in front of us here. I won't say that I enjoyed the week, but it was good training for me in a lot of different ways, and I'm certainly glad to be back with you today, and thank you, Rex, for preaching last week. We are going to be in Genesis chapter 41 this morning, Genesis chapter 41, and I mistakenly told Seth Genesis 42, so you have a sneak peek of the next lesson now since he's read that, but and that was my mistake, but I really do appreciate the beginning of Genesis chapter 41. As we've been going through these lessons on the life of Joseph, we see that he is a young man that has had very many trying times in his life. He grew up in a dysfunctional household where he was the father's favorite son. His brothers hated him. They sold him into slavery. And he also, in the situation that he is in now, he has been imprisoned in an unjust way. Potiphar's wife lied about him, and he ended up in prison. And I appreciate the way that chapter 41 begins, because it says, after two whole years, he has been in this dungeon for many years. If you look at his whole life, from the time that he's been sold into slavery, sort of a dungeon. He's 30 years old. He's 13 years removed from when he had lived with his father and brothers in Canaan, and he has been in so many different situations as he has been a slave or a prisoner in Egypt. In the last lesson, we noted how Joseph had interpreted the dream of the cupbearer and begged him not to forget him when he was to return to his position before Pharaoh. And of course he did forget, and that's where we have left off here. The cupbearer did forget about Joseph and Joseph here 2 years later. So Joseph has been forgotten in many different ways. You know, of course his father thought he was killed, but Joseph didn't know that. You know, how many times does a child get lost and the parents not go look for the child? Well, you know, here is a parent that's not going and looking for the lost child because he doesn't know the child is lost. He knows, he thinks that Joseph is gone. But in the mind of Joseph, here I am far away from home. Things are not going well. And the text here says, after two whole years. So I think there's a lot to read into that, in the frustration that Joseph certainly would have in this moment. So we'll go ahead and read some of chapter 41 as we begin our lesson this morning. So, chapter 41. After two whole years, Pharaoh dreamed that he was standing by the Nile, and behold, there came up out of the Nile seven cows, attractive and plump, and they were fed in the reed grass. And behold, seven other cows, ugly and thin, came up out of the Nile after them, and stood by the other cows on the bank of the Nile. And the ugly, thin cows ate up the seven attractive, plump cows. And Pharaoh awoke, and he fell asleep and dreamed a second time, and behold, seven ears of grain, plump and good, were growing on one stalk. And behold, after them sprouted seven ears, thin and blighted by the east wind. And the thin ears swallowed up the seven plump, full ears. And Pharaoh awoke, and behold, it was a dream. So in the morning his spirit was troubled, and he sent and called for all the magicians of Egypt and all the wise men. Pharaoh told them his dreams, but there was none who could interpret them to Pharaoh. Then the chief cupbearer said to Pharaoh, I remember my offenses today when Pharaoh was angry with his servants and put me and the chief baker in custody in the house of the captain of the guard. We dreamed on the same night, he and I, each having a dream with its own interpretation. A young Hebrew was there with us, a servant of the captain of the guard. When we told him, he interpreted our dreams to us, giving an interpretation to each man according to his dream. And as he interpreted to us, so it came about, I was restored to my office, and the baker was hanged. And so here is a familiar passage to us. This dream is familiar. I think my favorite part of the dream is every time that plump is mentioned, it says attractive. But we see the story here as Pharaoh had this dream, and he has this dream that he was standing by the Nile. And out of the Nile comes these seven beautiful, plump cows that fed on the grass. And the seven other cows came up out of the Nile, but they were ugly, thin. And the ugly, thin cows ate the seven beautiful, plump cows. And so that's the end of that dream, and Pharaoh wakes up. Then he has another dream, and he sees these seven ears of plump good grain growing on one stalk, and after them sprouted the seven thin and blighted ugly ears of grain, and the thin ears of grain swallowed up the plump full ears of grain. And Pharaoh awakens from that dream. And so these dreams are disturbing to Pharaoh, and he wants to know the meaning of the dreams. He calls for all his magicians, all the wise men in Egypt, and none of them could interpret the dreams. Then the cupbearer remembers, the light bulb turns on, and he wants to know, notes, hey, I remember my offenses today. And he goes on to explain that how when he had a dream, when Pharaoh had thrown him into the dungeon, how he and the baker had these dreams, and this young Hebrew was able to interpret. And not only was he able to interpret, the things that he interpreted came true. And so Pharaoh sends for Joseph. So Joseph at this time is still a prisoner living in the dungeon. Verse 14 says, then Pharaoh sent and called Joseph, and they quickly brought him out of the pit. And when he had shaved himself and changed his clothes, he came in before Pharaoh. And Pharaoh said to Joseph, I have had a dream, and there is no one who can interpret it. I have heard it said of you that when you hear a dream, you can interpret it. Joseph answered Pharaoh, it is not in me. God will give Pharaoh a favorable answer. Then Pharaoh said to Joseph, behold, in my dream, I was standing on the banks of the Nile. Seven cows, plump and attractive, came out of the Nile. And Pharaoh goes on to tell the dream that we have already read, that the plump cows were there, and the thin cows ate them, and the plump grain was there, and then the blighted ears that were withered and thin sprouted after them, and the thin ears swallowed up the good ones, and it did not help their condition at all. So what we see here is that Joseph, you know, gets all cleaned up to go before Pharaoh. It says he had shaved himself and changed his clothes. And so you see this imagery here in verse 14 that I want to point out. It says in verse 14 of chapter 41. It says, then Pharaoh sent and called Joseph, and they quickly brought him out of the pit. Isn't that interesting that it says they brought him out of the pit? It doesn't say out of the dungeon. It's really the same word that we see in chapter 37 when Joseph was thrown into a pit by his brothers. Doesn't say he's taken out of the dungeon. Doesn't say he's taken out of prison, but rather out of the pit. And so once, you know, standing before Pharaoh, it said that Pharaoh knows that Joseph has been said to be able to interpret these dreams. And I love the wonderful words of Joseph here when he says, it is not in me, but God will give Pharaoh a favorable answer. And so he doesn't say, well, you're absolutely right. I have a great reputation, and the things that I have said in the past have all come true. And, you know, what a a wise person you are to seek out the really wise person here to interpret your dreams. He says, it's not in me, but God can do it. And so we have observed this point in nearly every lesson of Joseph's life. Even though Joseph has been sinned against time and time again, he's been sinned against by his brothers on multiple occasions. He's been falsely accused by Potiphar's wife. He has been mistreated and serving a punishment that he did not deserve. He has been forgotten by those who should have appreciated what it was that he had done for them. So disappointment after disappointment and injustice after injustice, we still see that Joseph is pointing to God. And that's a wonderful thing. He doesn't look at himself and thinks that he can do this by his own power. He knows the power resides with the Lord, and he gives God the credit right off the bat when Pharaoh summons him. It is not in me, it is God. And certainly that's a lesson for us, and it should be something that's in our hearts and on the tip of our tongue every day of our life, that it's not about me. It's about God. And so Joseph then explains the dreams to Pharaoh. And of course, there's some things that happen as a result of these interpretations. So Pharaoh finishes telling Joseph the dreams, and he said, I told it to the magicians, but there was no one who could explain it to me. And it says, Joseph said to Pharaoh, the dreams of Pharaoh are one. God has revealed to Pharaoh what he is about to do. The seven good cows are 7 years, and the seven good ears are 7 years. The dreams are one. So he's saying the two dreams that you have the same interpretation. The two dreams that you have are describing the same situation. The seven lean and ugly cows that came up after them are 7 years. And the seven empty ears blighted by the east wind are also 7 years of famine. It is, as I told Pharaoh, God has shown to Pharaoh what he is about to do. There will come 7 years of great plenty throughout all the land of Egypt. But after them there will arise 7 years of famine, and all the plenty will be forgotten in the land of Egypt. The famine will consume the land, and the plenty will be unknown in the land by reason of the famine that will follow. For it will be very severe. And the doubling of Pharaoh's dream means that the thing is fixed by God. God will shortly bring it about. Now therefore, let Pharaoh select a discerning and wise man and set him over the land of Egypt. Let Pharaoh proceed to appoint overseers over the land and take 1/5 of the produce of the land of Egypt during the 7 plentiful years. And let them gather all the food of these good years that are coming, and store up grain under the authority of Pharaoh for food in the cities, and let them keep it. That food shall be a reserve for the land against the 7 years of famine that are to occur in the land of Egypt, so the land may not perish through the famine. And so here Joseph explains the dreams to Pharaoh, that God is going to send these 7 years of great plenty throughout all Egypt, but after that is done, the 7 years are over, there's going to be 7 years of famine, and it's going to be so bad that people are really going to forget about the time of plenty, because the time of famine is going to be so severe. And not only does Joseph interpret this dream and says that it is fixed, and God told it to you twice because it's going to be something that cannot be avoided, Joseph then advises that a wise man should be set up as an administrator, so that the nation can begin storing up during the 7 years, and so that they're ready for the 7 years of severe famine. Of course, you know what's going to happen, because Seth already told us. But we know what's going to happen with this, that Joseph is going to be that wise man, and Pharaoh selects him. Yeah, we've already got one right here. And so verse 27 says, this proposal pleased Pharaoh and all his servants. And Pharaoh said to his servants, can we find a man like this, in whom is the Spirit of God? Then Pharaoh said to Joseph, since God has shown you all this, there is none so discerning and wise as you are. You shall be over my house, and all my people shall order themselves as you command. only as regards the throne will I be greater than you. And Pharaoh said to Joseph, see, I have set you over all the land of Egypt. And Pharaoh took his signet ring from his hand and put it on Joseph's hand and clothed him in garments of fine linen and put a gold chain around his neck and made him ride in his second chariot. And they called out before him, bow the knee. Thus he set him over all the land of Egypt. Moreover, Pharaoh said to Joseph, I am Pharaoh, and without your consent, no one shall lift up hand or foot in all the land of Egypt. And Pharaoh called Joseph's name Zaphnath-Paneah, and he gave him marriage Asenath, the daughter of Potipharah, priest of On. So Joseph went out in the land of Egypt. And so you see a big role reversal here in this imagery, because the proposal here pleases Pharaoh, and he recognizes that Joseph has the Spirit of God, and he sets Joseph over all Egypt, second only to himself. He puts the signet ring on him. Remember what Joseph had before? You know, when he was at home, he had the coat of many colors that signified how Jacob loved him. And then he was stripped of that. He was stripped of that and thrown into the pit. And then the brothers took and put goat's blood on the robe and took it to their father and told Jacob that we found this. Is this your son's? And so he's been stripped of honor, and he's been sold into slavery. And now Pharaoh makes Joseph ride in his second chariot. He says, You're second only to me, and he calls for all of Egypt to bow down to him. Now we start thinking about these dreams that Joseph had, don't we? The dreams that he had as people bowed down to him in his dreams. And he is given complete rule over Egypt. Pharaoh said, whatever you say, they all have to do. And Joseph also is made a full Egyptian. His name is changed. He marries an Egyptian woman who is the daughter of an Egyptian priest. So what we see here is there's really not any more honor that could be bestowed upon Joseph other than the Pharaoh said, well, I'm just going to let you be the Pharaoh. That would be the ultimate, I guess. But he's given him everything else except his own position. And so during this 7 years of plenty, Joseph is able to store up these mass quantities of grain. And let's see what it says here. It says in verse 46, Joseph was 30 years old when he entered the service of Pharaoh, king of Egypt. And Joseph went out from the presence of Pharaoh and went through all the land of Egypt. During the 7 plentiful years, the earth produced abundantly, and he gathered up all the food of these 7 years, which occurred in the land of Egypt. And he put the food in the cities. He put in every city the food from the fields around it. And Joseph stored up grain in great abundance, like the sand of the sea, until he ceased to measure it, for it could not be measured. So very successful in what he is doing here. But you see this phrase, like the sand of the sea. Where have we heard that before? The promise to Abraham, I'm going to make your descendants like the sand of the sea. Here God is using his hand over this situation so that he can fulfill these promises made to Abraham as Isaac and Jacob. They're going to be fulfilled. And Joseph is going to have 2 sons with his wife. It says in verse 50, before the year of famine came, 2 sons were born to Joseph. Asenath, the daughter of Potipharah, priest of On, bore them to him. Joseph called the name of the firstborn Manasseh, for he said, God has made me forget all my hardship in my father's house. The name of the second he called Ephraim, for God has made me fruitful in the land of my affliction. And so here we see that Joseph has gone from the prison to the palace. He is very successful. He has 2 sons with his wife. The first son is called Manasseh, because God has made me forget my hardship and all my father's house. My second son is called Ephraim, because God has made me fruitful in the land of my affliction. You can see some things about Joseph in what he chooses to name his children. You might think he would name them, well, finally, you know, if that could be be a name. You know, that's not his attitude. His attitude is still centered around God. But it's also significant here when you see the name Manasseh. God has made me forget all my hardship in my father's house. He's kind of forgotten the bad time that was behind him. And so this is a really significant time in Joseph's life, but he's not returned to the place that he's supposed to be. Things are better for him. And Ephraim, God has made me fruitful in the land of my affliction. So when this famine strikes with severity, the severity that God decreed, and all the earth comes to Egypt, and we see in the next chapter that we're going to see Egypt standing before Joseph to buy grain. Verse 53 says, "The 7 years of plenty that occurred in the land of Egypt came to an end, and the 7 years of famine began to come. As Joseph had said, there was famine in all lands, but in the land of Egypt there was bread. When all the land of Egypt was famished, the people cried out to Pharaoh for bread. Pharaoh said to all the Egyptians, 'Go to Joseph. What he says to you, do.' So when the famine had spread over all the land, Joseph opened all the storehouses and sold to the Egyptians, for the famine was severe in the land of Egypt. Moreover, all the earth came to Egypt to Joseph to buy grain, because the famine was severe over all the earth." So everything was happening just the way that God had said. Everything was happening just the way that Joseph had interpreted to Pharaoh. And Joseph was the perfect leader at this time to carry out these things as Pharaoh had suggested, so that there would be grain, there would at least be some remedy for people to go and buy, because Egypt had used those 7 years to store up in the storehouses for this period of time. So what kind of lessons can we learn from this chapter? One thing that I love about this, as we already noted, is that you really appreciate what you see in the names of Joseph's children. And one great point that you can get out of this chapter is that God is always greater than your past. And we all know that. We can see that in so many different places. You look at the life of Paul. You know, Paul had a terrible past in what he did to persecute Christians. We also see in the life of Peter the mistakes that he made. And sometimes people dwell on the past. And Joseph names his children to show how God has made him fruitful in the land of what? The land of my affliction. So he sees that this has not been an easy place for me. The last years, half of his life has been spent in prison and in slavery and punishment that he didn't deserve. And he got there because of the hatred of his brothers. It was the land of affliction. But he said, God's made this work. God has made me fruitful in the land of my affliction. And God is making me forget these hardships that I've had the past 13 years. And so the way that he names his children here is really a statement of faith. God's people should not be defined by difficulties of the past. But we have this, it seems that, notice this for a long period of time, that we have this phenomenon of blaming present problems on past circumstances. You know, my parents didn't treat me right, or I had this thing happen in my past. And we play a victim role and blame things that happened in the past for present circumstances. I realize that a lot of things that happen in the past in our lives do have an effect on us. But we don't need to continue to play the victim role. And we can see that Joseph's faith in God does not allow him to do that. He sees that God is working in his life, and it's reflected in the way that he names his children. When you look at the book of Ephesians, what's one of the big themes of the book of Ephesians? It's that new identity that you have in Christ. That new identity that you have because you're a child of God. That you're not going to wallow in the past. And so you're not identified with the past. And so the lesson for us should be the same, is that God has made us new creatures. It's one of the themes that we see in our salvation, is that we have put off the old man. We've put off the past, and we can forget the past. And in 2 Corinthians chapter 5, 2 Corinthians chapter 5, verse 17, therefore, if anyone is in Christ, he is a new creation. The old has passed away. Behold, the new has come. And so that is a common theme in the life of every Christian, should be that God is bigger than your past. And Joseph is declaring that in the names of his children. That God takes the wounds and uses those to mold us for His glory. And so that's a great lesson when we look at the life of Joseph. How he keeps getting beaten up. He keeps getting thrown down. The things keep happening to him, but he never seems to have a bad attitude about it. Another thing that we can learn from this account is that sometimes life can look hopeless. I don't know that Joseph woke up on that day thinking, "Oh, this is going to be my day." He had been forgotten for a couple of years. Probably not going to seem any different than any other day of disappointment that he had been having, because it was just disappointment after disappointment. So nothing in his life circumstances that could have led him to know or believe that, oh, today's going to be the day of deliverance. I'm going to be taken out of the pit. I'm going to be made second in the kingdom, only second to Pharaoh. I'm going to be somebody big in Egypt. God didn't tell him when he was in the pit, thrown down there by his brothers, that, oh, well, in 13 years, everything's going to be good. We don't know what our circumstances are going to be from day to day. Sometimes bad things happen, and sometimes we might expect bad things to happen, but how optimistic are we? Oh, well, today's going to be the good day. That's probably not the thing that usually comes to our mind. Just as trial can blindside you one day, the day of deliverance might blindside you too. And so what we carefully note in Joseph's life is that Joseph, he was one that was going to serve God no matter what. And this event that we see in Genesis chapter 41, he's not back with his family. I mean, this is a good day, but it's not the ultimate good day. He's not back with his family. Joseph is not given back everything that he lost in those years of slavery and being in prison. It's not as if a magic wand was waved and then life, got a reset. But a thing that we can learn from this is that things may not always be the way that they are. That circumstances are going to change, and things may change on a dime. You may get a chance to catch your breath. But then there's things that shift. There's things that happen. And things can get better. So today might be the day that Joseph is taken out of the pit. And that's a wonderful thing to look forward to. And certainly we know that being a new creature in Christ, that is something that we can all look forward to, that there's going to be a day that we be taken out of the pit. So, lessons from this chapter is just let the past be the past. concentrate on that new creature that you are in Christ, that you are given a new life, that you are given a relationship with the Father that you didn't deserve. And also that God is able to help us forget our hardships. I really love that part of this chapter as Joseph names his boys. And in the names of those boys, you can see his appreciation for the deliverance that he has had. That this is helping me forget about the past. This is helping me appreciate God. And in Romans chapter 8, Paul says that, "For I consider the sufferings of this present time not worth comparing with the glory that is to be revealed in us." That's going to make a lot more sense later. But Paul is telling us that we need to realize that this should make sense now. And Paul certainly can write from a standpoint of knowing suffering. And by, at the time he wrote this, there was a lot of suffering that he was yet to endure. But he lived a life that showed that the sufferings of this present time are something that he could tolerate. That's why he could write a book about joy from prison. The sufferings of this present time are not worth comparing with the glory that is to be revealed in us. So Joseph is a great example of this type of attitude, that don't give up. And don't give up. Don't leave your faith, because you are going to be pulled out of the pit. And sometimes the earthly circumstances that we go through may be with us for a while. But we're going to be pulled out of the pit if we are faithful to God. So Joseph, again, this is another great example that we can learn from this great example. And there's certainly more that we will learn as we go through the rest of these chapters. I hope this will be useful and be an encouragement to you, especially during a time that we may feel like we're down in the pit a little bit and we're looking for that day of deliverance and looking for things to get better. And it just doesn't seem to get better at times. It seems to get worse. But let's remember what it is that we're looking forward to be at home in heaven with God in eternity. If we can help in any way to respond to the invitation, we'd invite you to come while we stand and sing.
Zion's call sweetly rings over land and sea, bidding God.